want to ask the question today. Each one ask and answer it for themselves. Can you dwell with God? Literally. Have them in your heart, inside of you. Can you dwell with them? Feast of Tabernacles gives me both pleasure and pain when I observe it at the same time. Now, it's way worth doing, but it brings up memories, and sometimes there's some pain that comes with it. A pleasure is being able to spend time worshiping God with people that I really do care a great deal for, with people that we have a good relationship with, people I love. Being able to come to a site like this and spend 9 or 10 days talking, fellowshipping, and worshiping God with others that I love. Last night, Ingrid and I were talking a little bit, and one of the things came up is we've known each other for a long time. Tom, I don't remember what year it was when you guys first came and found us, but it's been a long time. And we knew who her and then Nick was, and pick them out of a crowd anywhere, spend time talking to them. But a couple years ago when her and Nick came and the kids, and they stayed with us. If you guys want to have a class, now's the time, I guess. When they stayed with us, rather than going to another site and driving back and forth, which is fine, people do that. But that's when we really got to know not who they are, but we got to know them. We spent a huge amount of time together that year. And we were able to become close and develop a good relationship with them. The pain part about it that I experienced at the Feast of Tabernacle is how much that I miss people that aren't here anymore. People that I love. It's the hardest for people like Charles Kimbrough, who was like a father to me. He called me his adopted son. I was very close to him. My brother-in-law, Tommy Atwaska, Mary's sister's husband, her sister Linda. It was at this site right here that he fell in love with Jesus and went home and decided to get baptized. And then spent the rest of his life trying to get his kids to understand how important that was. It was his dying wish that his kids would have a relationship like he had. That was the most important thing he tried to get across to them before he died. And then Mary's sister Linda desperately wants to be here. Very badly, but she can't get away down here. She's afraid to fly or travel on a train or something like that. She couldn't get anybody to take her this year. She's hoping she can get here for Passover in Tennessee. But my mother, who year after year, more years than not, would be here. Years on this site, keeping the feast with us, spending time with her. Up until the last couple years, when she died, she wasn't able to come. Bertha Reynolds, who wants to be here really bad, but can't be. There's others we can go on. People that choose not to be here that we wish that they were. people that want to be here but can't because there's things going on in their life, so they had to go to a site closer to them. Eva's another one. But 3 years before my mother died, Mary Kathy and I made an emergency trip to Wisconsin. Talked about it before, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but my niece, who is the charge nurse in the ICU where she was, sent me a picture and said, if you want to see Grandma, you better get up here. Sent me a picture of her. And so when I got that picture that morning, I did the last few things that I had to do with a customer, and then packed stuff up, packed the rifle up, other things, and headed to Wisconsin and went up there. With lots of prayers, 3 days later, she was awake and off the ventilator and recovering and could talk again. They had her in a drug-induced coma. This was before they were killing people with COVID. She had double pneumonia and some other health problems. But she told me, because she was very close to death, and she told me when we were up there, when you're dying, nothing that we think is important matters anymore. All of her life, the things that she had worked for, strived for, she thought was important, none of that matters. She says your possessions, your accomplishments, your jobs, your money, it really means nothing. She says the only thing that matters and means anything is the ones we love in God. And if we're not, you know, she's trying to get it across to me, if we're not spending time on that, we're wasting our time. If that's not our priorities, our life is screwed up. Don't wait, like I did, until you're 80 years old to figure it out. When it could be too late. Have you ever thought about what Satan has perverted? I mean, he's busy, you know, coming up with all kinds of schemes and plans and deceptions. But he is the ultimate pervert. He's got a million ways of fooling us and tricking us and getting us to do things. Number one goal for him is anything that God says, if he can get us to do the opposite of that, he's won. So that's where he spends his time. But in the meantime, if he can get us to do things that wreck our lives, screw up our priorities, well, just settle for that. So he spends some time on that. He keeps all of us in bondage, chasing things that really don't matter. All of our lives, we're chasing after stuff that really doesn't. We think it's going to give us happiness and peace and security and safety, and we're going to, you know, some people think it's money, some people think, you know, everybody's got a different concept in their head, what's going to make them happy, and they chase after it. And then you hear people that have more money than they could ever do anything with, and, you know, Elvis Presley dies on the toilet because he's all pumped up full of drugs and dope, and he has a heart attack. And, you know, John Paul Getty, one of the richest men, he said, give it all up for real love. But, so people that accomplish these things, they're unhappy. And people even that we know every day that you run across, you know, that are successful in the standards of the world, they're not happy. Whatever it is, money, property, possessions, status, power, how much is enough? Well, whatever they have, it's not quite enough. They need just a little bit more. We allow ourselves to be deceived by Satan what our priorities really should be. Deceived into false things that we think are going to give us peace and happiness, but never will. And sort of like this. Put this verse up here in Isaiah chapter 5, verse 20. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Exactly the opposite of what they are. Look at what's going out in the world today. It's getting, you know, we're in a free fall. It's getting worse. And if Satan can't get you, he wants your children. If he can't get your kids, then he wants your grandchildren. He don't care as long as he can destroy somebody. This is what he does to us. This is what the world buys into and accepts. And the whole world is deceived. You know, when we read the verse about Satan, who's the god of this world that deceives the whole world, and we say, yeah, look, nobody understands the Sabbath and the Holy Day, it goes, yeah, those are big things. I'm not downplaying those, but it goes far deeper than that. He doesn't stop with the Sabbath, Holy Days, and pork chops. I'm going to do a slight diversion today. And I'm going to ask, don't raise your hand, but answer the question for yourself. If I was to ask, how many of you here today or listening later on are a communist? Now today, it's a much more popular thing to be a communist. We got socialist senators. And I'm not, before I even get into this, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not talking about communism versus capitalism and worshiping politicians. And I said it hundreds of times, the Republicans and the Democrats, I equate that to the Crips and the Bloods. They're both cutthroat, heartless, evil people who the world pegs their happiness. Oh, if this person can only win this election, we'll all be happy. Yes, it's true, one is going to be worse than the other, but even if the one that everybody is supporting and thinks is going to be the some kind of a messiah, they're still going to cheat you, rob you, steal you, and oppress you. Well, what about communism? Who would think that they're a communist? Now, maybe somebody that's lived in a communist country understands more that that's a more evil form of government, and it's more oppressive, and the people suffer more under communism and socialism. But most people in the United States, especially, I'm trying to think, I couldn't remember the guy's name. It was a senator. He had hearings. But Larry, maybe you can help me. Back in the 70s, is it McCarthy? You know, he would accuse people of being a communist, open up a hearing on them, and just basically destroy it all. Because that was a very bad thing then. Can't remember who that was, but Joe McCarthy, okay. I remember watching some of the hearings on TV when I was a kid, and oh, that was like one of the worst things you could say about somebody. If you made that accusation, you're a communist, their life was pretty much destroyed. Now people will vote for you if you say you are. What about ourselves? Keep track. Does anybody know what Karl Marx's 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto? What they are. Don't raise your hand. I know some here know it. But most people, I doubt if you asked 100 people, if you went down to the beach or you went to a shopping center, Walmart, whatever, and you stopped and you asked 100 people what the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto are, they couldn't answer you. Well, heck, you could stop 100 Christians and probably 99 out of 100 can't tell you what the Ten Commandments are. So if they can't tell you that, how can they, you know, they can't list them off, how are they ever going to do something like 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto? I think, well, who cares? Why would I even want to know? Well, if you don't know what the Ten Commandments are, maybe Satan can trick you and fool you on some of them. If you don't know what the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and one of the reasons I bring this up, this is a really evil form of government. But anyway, Probably 99 out of 100 could not tell you. You'd have to go 200, 500, 1,000. I don't know how many to find one. So I'm going to list them here one at a time, and you see if you kind of agree with these. First one, abolition of private property and land and application of all rents of land to public purpose. That's number one. The majority of property in this country is owned by government agencies, states, local municipalities, cities, counties, federal land. We're told that this is public land. And if we want to use it, we've got to go to the appropriate agency and rent or pay a royalty or a usage fee, even if all you want to do is go and enjoy the scenery. People brought up they wanted to go to St. Andrews Park, so I called and found out about it, and it was $8 admission. So if you're going to drive into the park and just look, forget about, you know, I know there's a beach and you can swim there, and just going to sit there in your car and look at God's creation, there's a fee for doing that. It says, well, the one day we don't want to do it then is on a high day or Sabbath. But public land, who owns that land? The government. Is it private? No. Do you have to pay rent or fees or something to be there? I didn't even get into the camping and things like that. Yeah. So that's number one. The state levies a property tax on such private land. Not talking about the public's lands. But if we don't pay, it orders a tax sale to get its money from us one way or the other. So not only do they publicly talk about the public lands, people that think that they own their property and they have private land and they have ownership of that land, if you don't pay the fees and the rents to the government, they take it away from you, sell it off to the highest bidder, and get their money anyhow, and you're under a bridge in a tent. Sounds like the term property owner means property renter. Try going 3 years in most states without paying that rent, and you won't have any place. In other words, we're nothing more than feudal serfs on the land. We're living on the king's land, paying our land use fees in the form of property taxes, and I haven't even brought things up like BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, the DNR, Department of Natural Resources, or eminent domain, or a host of other things that you'll quickly find out that you really don't control anything. That all land really is under the authority and the thumb and the decision of the government. So they've abolished it all. Number two of the Communist Manifesto. A heavy, progressive, or graduated income tax. In other words, the more you make, the more they take. Oh, I don't have to have a long talk about this one because everybody knows that it's out there. Everybody knows you're all filling out your 1040s, your W-9s, your W-4s, and reporting everything that you make to the government. So that's 2 out of 10. And most people would say, yeah, these things are, we have to have regulations over public lands and how are we going to pay for it? We have to have fees and usages. And what are you going to do if they couldn't connect, pay for or collect property tax? I don't know. What did the government do 100 years ago when it didn't exist in most places? Number three, abolition of all rights of inheritance. Now, before somebody says something like, well, that's not here. That's not in this country. My aunt died, or my uncle died, or my parents died, and they left me something. See, that's how they fool us. You ever hear something that's referred to as the death tax, also known as the state taxes? See, the state gets into the picture when you enter into a third-party limited general partnership with a spouse. That makes the state, you and your spouse, equal partners. We've got state marriage licenses. We're all registered with the state with birth certificates, and we register our children with it. See, they hold the title to our lives, our marriages, our property, and everything that we have. Your cars. What did you have to do to get your license plate? If anybody's ever bought a new car, what happens? They take the dealer or the manufacturer's statement of origin and they trade it into the state, and the state takes that and gives you back a piece of paper that they call a title. Well, usually it goes to the bank because nobody buys their car anyhow. They go to the bank and say, you know, will you buy a car for me and I'll pay you rent for it? but the state's got the title. They're the actual owners of it. They tell you what to do with it, where you could drive it, where you can't. They hold the title to everything in our lives. We create things like money, children, property. And then one day, our spouse or a parent dies, a grandparent. After the funeral's over, we sit down and we try and decide what we're going to do with, you know, what's there, what's left. What can we do? How much money is there? How much property? Then somebody from the state knocks at the door, so to speak, and they want their share. It's called an inheritance tax. Well, that's only for rich people. Okay. Well, then we got to go and do things like go to probate court. Oh, and if you're going to go to probate court, Tammy just found all these things out. She's just had to go through all of this with her other grandpa. First thing you got to do is you got to get an EIN number for the state. Where do you get that? Well, from the IRS. If grandpa had some money in the bank and he's got some bills that are due, like the electric, the water, the house payment, and you want to get that money and pay these bills so that they don't shut the electric off and the water off and foreclose on the property and auction it off before you can sell it or do anything with it. And even if you're a spouse, you go through the probate courts most of the time. You got to get a mark, a number from the government, from the IRS. And you got to go down to court. You got to pay these slimy little guys that they call lawyers and pay fees to the courts, a filing probate fee. And then you've got to make an accounting of every dollar and where every dollar went and who got what. If there was anything, who got what? And the state figures out what's owed to them. And that has to come off the top. You can't close the estate without paying up all of the fees. After all, the government figures that it's paid for the kids' education, the school lunches, the FDC, and etc. They've paid for the person. You've worked for them. They got your title. It's just like owning a dog. You know, if you register a dog, go to AKC and you got to get registration papers for your dog. Maybe we should all be mutts. But anyway, they've paid for all of this stuff, so they want their cut. And the average inheritance tax is from 28% to 35% of the estate that goes to the government. By the time all the fees and everything is figured out, it's the national average. Abolition of all rights of inheritance. I think they've done a pretty good job on that. You can't get what's yours without their okay. That's 3 out of 10. Number 4, confiscation of the property of all immigrants and rebels. Ever hear of things called government seizures? IRS property confiscation? Some people say, well, yeah, the immigrants, just take it all from them. It's immigrants and rebels. Doesn't matter who to them. What about the 1997 crime terrorist bills, which calls for the imprisonment of terrorists and also for those who speak out against the government? You know, there are people being arrested now in the last 10, 11 months that just showed up in Washington, D.C. on January 6th to protest against their government. And they're arresting them and imprisoning them and putting them in solitary confinement, and some of them have died there already. And then they have to prove that they didn't do anything wrong, that you got a First Amendment right to free speech. Google turns them in to the government because of the trackers on their cell phones. Oh, this person, and look, they were within 50 feet of the Capitol building. The Capitol Police open the doors and invite people in, and oh, look, they went 10 feet down the hall. Nah, you're going to jail for sure then. But also, Senate Bill 3081, it's called the Enemy Belligerent Interrogation, Detention, and Prosecution Act. Well, so much for confiscation of property and destruction of your personal things. They'll seize you yourself, the most important property you have. Number five. Try and get through this faster. Centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. What's that? It's a long term, but you ever hear of the Federal Reserve System? If everybody in this room got together and we decided that we were going to create a bank ourselves, what would happen to us? Well, we'd all go to jail. You can pool your money together and live, you know, in common if you want. They'll let you do that. But when you go, if you start issuing things like credit and, you know, they got this fractional reserve system and we started doing those things, you have to be registered and under the control of the Federal Reserve and to do those things, or it's illegal and you will go to jail. I'm not going to get into how fractional reserve banking works, but they create money out of thin air, out of nothing. And it's a scam. And it is illegal. It should be illegal the way they do it, but it's not. And everybody accepts it. But anyhow, everybody knows that the banks are controlled and regulated. And they think it's federal, but it's actually... If you live in a city like Atlanta, I don't know, maybe Detroit has, I'm just big enough, they probably have one unless they've moved out of Detroit to Flint or somewhere else. But you look up Federal Reserve Bank in the yellow pages. Nobody does that anymore because everything's on the internet. But in the old phone books, it wasn't in the yellow pages. Or I'm sorry, it wasn't in the blue pages. You know, the government agencies were in blue, and then the yellow pages were all the businesses. You'd find it next to Federal Express and different businesses with federal in their name, some quasi-federal private for the elite corporation that controls the money systems for this country. But anyhow, that's 5 out of 5. Number 6. Centralization of the means of communication and transportation in the hands of the state. Now, this is one that really doesn't affect a whole lot of people on the surface, or so they think, so they don't seem to worry about it. But it's the sixth plank of the Communist Manifesto. Ever hear of something called the FAA? The FCC? Larry and I know a lot about the FCC. If if I wanted to fire up my ham, put up an antenna, because I haven't had an antenna in 15 years, but put up an antenna, fire up my ham radio, and talk to Larry, we can't do that unless we have permission from the FCC. They regulate all that. What about the ICC, Interstate Commerce Commission? See, all the government entities that regulate how we travel and communicate, they're already out there. So that's 6 out of 10. And I'm guilty. Anybody that practices this stuff, you're a practicing communist, whether you know it or not. So let's look at 7. Extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, the bringing into cultivation of wastelands and the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan. Long sentence, long statement. What's all that about? Well, the government doesn't own factories like they do here, like they do in China, where they actually own, you know, if General Motors wants to start building cars in China, they've got to make a deal with the government, and the Chinese government actually owns 50% of the business. But here, the government controls everything you do and has a stake in everything that they do. And for common good, on June 9th of 2011, Obama signed into law with an executive order number 13575. He seized the power over food, fiber, and energy. 100% complete control. The government can step in and do anything they want with it. They literally have the power if they hear a rumor, Tom's got food at his house, Tom and Narda have some food, because they got a big family, and, you know, they can come into your house, kick the door down if they have to, take a look around, and decide that if you have too much food there, and confiscate it. If you start a factory and you're going to produce food, or you start a small business and you have some land and you're going to start growing it, anybody know what they're doing to this Amish farmer in Pennsylvania right now?
No.
He's got a co-op type thing. You have to pay. You've got to join and pay, become a part of it, become a partner with him, and then you can buy. He produces organic, clean, no pesticides, no artificial fertilizers or anything. Food, real food. He makes real food and raises animals, and you can buy meat from them and different things. They've already said in fines, he owes them $1.5 million. He's got like 4,000 people, I think, in this co-op. That might be too low, but he's one of the bigger ones, so they decided to make an example out of him. You can't do that. Why? Because the food is not inspected and approved by the FDA. You mean he actually kills a cow or a goat or a pig or something, butchers it up, and you can come on next Tuesday and pick up, if you want to buy half of that cow or all of that goat or whatever, you can come pick it up. And he'll grind it into hamburger or do whatever. Oh, he can't have any of that. And when his crops come in the fall, you can actually go buy your beans or your corn, and it's not inspected. And we can't have that. So tell me, and some people say, well, how do we know it's safe? This is terrible. It's got to be regulated. The government's got to control all this. 7th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Most people in this country think that's a good thing. 8, equal obligation of all to work. Let me say that first part again. Equal obligation of all to work. And the establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. If a woman chooses to work, that's fine. Mary chooses to work. But because of inflation and taxes and government regulations and funny money and violating all these commandments, really, that come from the Bible, you know, from money to everything else, because we work for insurance, have Social Security numbers, pay taxes, fill out a 1040 every April, not to mention things like the CCC or the Civilian Conservation Corps and the WPA, the Works Project Administration, and AmeriCorps, and all of the government-sponsored things of controlling labor force. And people think, oh, that's only like forced work camps and stuff, like in communist countries. No. No. It's regulating all of it. And again, equal obligation of all to work. They want everybody to work. Men, women, everybody. I said if they choose, woman chooses, that's one thing. But forced? So if they can't force them by law, they'll force them economically to survive. You've done a good job of that. That's number eight. Number nine, what could that be? Combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries in a global abolition of the distinction between town and country by a more equitable distribution of the population over the country. Huh? Anybody hear of planning and zoning regulations? Ever hear about that? There are still a few counties in Tennessee, they're slowly going away, and I know other states too, that they don't have all of these rules and regulations, where you don't have to go to the government and get permission to build a shed or a garage or a house. You just do it. And a lot of you haven't met William and Lisa Bertard, but they moved here from Southern California, and he went down to find out what he had to do. They bought some property, and he wants to put up a few houses on it. And so what do we have to do? What kind of regulations used to California with all the stuff that they do? And they said, well, just, you know, build them and tell us where they are. Well, they just want to know so that they can tax you for them, but you don't have to do all these things. There's no zoning regulations where they live. There's no, they say, well, you got to have that. Well, do you really? What about urban zoning with 5, 10, and 20-year plans? I've read some of those that they're implementing in some of the bigger cities in Knoxville. They're already under it. They all have to submit these plans. And the plans now are taking people from, they want to penalize people that live out in the suburbs and get them to live more urban, you know, inner city type thing. They can get rid of more cars like that and have public transportation systems. And so they want to penalize people and make it harder to get your permits and things and force everybody so that they can herd us up like a bunch of animals on the farm, get us all inside of the fence and corral us all up and watch over, count us, and control us. And most people think, well, yeah, I don't want just somebody putting a house up next to me. I got to make sure. I'm not even talking about, you know, building a house for the bank. I personally don't have a problem with that. If you're going to go down to the bank and ask them for some money so that you can build a house, you're not building your house. You're building the bank's house. They got a right to say, well, we want to make sure that it passes an electrical inspection, that it's wired right, a plumbing inspection, that it's plumbed right. If you build a house with your money and the thing burns down tomorrow because you miswired it, or every time you flush your toilet it comes up out of the bathtub because you were stupid and didn't know how, or you didn't ask questions, or you didn't hire somebody that knew how to do it, it's your money, your problem, you're stupid, you live with it. Or you don't even want plumbing. You say, let's just dig an outhouse, a hole, and we'll make an outhouse in the backyard. I don't want these things. I want to live off-grid. It's your business. Government says you can't do all that stuff. So, what do you think number 10 is? Free education for all children in government schools and abolition of children's factory labor in its present form. That doesn't mean you can't have slave labor and kids. It's just in the present form that it was being done. We've got to change that, but it's still allowed for. If you're 12 years old and you want to get a job somewhere, they'll let you get a job somewhere. But you can only work so many hours a day and from certain times, and it depends if it's a school night or a weekend night. They just have to control child labor and free education for all. The public school brainwashing system and the Department of Education indoctrinate the kids into the agenda that the government wants them to. This belief system is drilled into our kids' heads through the public school system so that by the time that they graduate, they're good little socialists. And all messed up and confused. So what I'm saying, I said don't answer this, but most people will answer somewhere between 7 and 10 of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto that they practice them and think it's a good thing. So when I ask the question, are you a practicing communist? Most people are, and they have no clue because they don't know what communism is. Well, what's that got to do with a sermon? Because I spent too much time going through all of that to make a point. Have you been fooled by Satan? Has the government tricked you into becoming a communist? If it has, maybe Satan has tricked you into becoming something that you don't believe you should be. You don't even know it. You've been deceived. You've been fooled by Satan and his religions that are out there and beliefs in the Bible that everybody knows. You know it. You've heard it. It's true. Christmas is Jesus' birthday. I don't care what anybody says. It's in my Bible. I know it. Well, are there more lies that we've all been bought into like that? Now, here people in this room, they kind of laugh at that and say, oh, how stupid. You know, they all think, yeah, my family thinks that, but gee, it's not there. How many other things like that are there that we've bought into and we've accepted? Do we realize that most of the world that calls themselves a Christian, they are not true, real Christians? And because of that, you got people that say, oh, don't call me a Christian. Christians are all pagans. When you say you're not a Christian, how are you going to tell anybody about the creator of this world? You have already turned most of the people out that consider themselves Christians, that believe in God. Maybe not the real God, but they believe in the one that they think wrote this book. And you say, nope, I ain't a Christian. Don't call me that. Ask another question. If Jesus would have come to you, if you would have been alive almost 2,000 years ago, would you have followed him? If he came to you and said this, when Mark chapter 8, starting in verse 34, when he had called the people to himself with his disciples also, he said to them, whoever desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what will a profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? If he would have asked you, follow me, don't raise your hand. Think in your own head. Would you have done it? If you would have heard those words, we all say, oh yeah, we would have done it, then read those words. Would you have done it knowing what he said you had to do if you were going to do it? Or would you say, let me go home and take care of my parents first, and my children, they're small, they need to grow up, or my wife, I gotta provide some things, get some things ready, or the women that followed with the ministry and that, my husband and my kids, they need me. Would we have said, wherever you lead, I'll go? We all sing the song, wherever he leads, I'll go. How do you do this? What's one of the ways? Let's take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 5. This is the greatest commandment of all. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Now, I've done sermons, studies, just on these few little verses here, these four verses. And I'm not going to go through all of the fine points on each one of them, but basically, this is everything you do. When you wake up in the morning, when you go to bed, everything is centered on loving God. How many people, when they start out to find a mate, do they look for somebody that, number one, loves God first over everything? Not many. Some do. But 99 out of 100 don't. They want to find somebody first that they like, that they can love, that... I'm not saying marry somebody that you hate, you have no feelings for. I'm just saying if that person puts God first above all, even yourself, I don't want Mary putting me over God. If she'll do that, then if somebody else comes around or whatever, she'll put them over me. Or if she does puts God first, everything she does will be obeying him. And I'll be the luckiest man in the world. And same for her. She'll be the luckiest woman in the world if I put God first in my life. Because there's all kinds of things. How do you treat a spouse? How do you treat someone? Not only just your spouse, but other people. Other women, other men, other children. You know, somebody that puts their children above everything. Well, that goes on all the time because they fit God into their children's busy schedule. Julie's got a dance recital. Oh, guess what? It's Sabbath. Johnny's got a football game. Oh, it's Sabbath. The kids want to do this, that, whatever. Oh, well, we'll schedule God into our busy lives when it's convenient for us. Instead of everything you say and you do, you're teaching your kids from the time they get up in the morning, from the time they get back at night. And you're being a godly parent for them. And you're raising godly children. And if we're all doing it right, they got no interest in doing those things. There are jobs I could do that would cause me to violate God's standards. I don't want those jobs. Jobs I could make a lot more money at if I'd only be willing to compromise. I don't want them. If we've done our jobs with our children won't want to do those things that cause them to violate what God says. Because he'll be first in their lives. But Satan's got us all screwed up and all deceived, and we don't do that. We spend years in school preparing for a job or a career. And then after you get out of school, then sometimes you have to go on and you have to do more school or more training. Sometimes for years, getting ready for a preparing for a job or a career. But why do people train more for a career than they do for God? K through 12, 13 years, and then more as you go on from there. Years, hours, hundreds, thousands of hours of training and studying. And somehow that's more important than cracking a book and studying this. Our priorities are screwed up. I'm not saying don't learn how to read, write, figure. You know, you'll need those skills in anything that you do. But where's the priority? Where's the balance? If God exists, the single most important thing we can do is to figure that out. It's more important than a career, more important than a spouse, more important than children. If he doesn't exist, then we can go have fun and do anything you want. But if he does exist, he still wants you to have pleasure and peace. But he wants true pleasure, true peace, true happiness. And then we should look at what he says to do to attain that. And I haven't even got to the salvation and living in his kingdom. I'm talking about while we're still here walking around in this miserable place that we call society. Back to what my mother said, if we understand these, the job won't matter, the house won't matter, the car won't matter, the possessions won't matter. Nothing matters but your family, those you love, and God. And not in that order. The God part that comes first. How do we dwell with God and have a relationship with Him? Psalm 15:1 says, Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your holy hill? He who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. He who does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against a friend, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but he honors those who fear the Lord. He swears to his own hurt and does not change. He who does not put his money at usury, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things will never be moved. Well, good thing it's only talking about dwelling in his tabernacle, living in God's kingdom and all that. No, it really means who can have a relationship with him? Who can approach him? Who can have a personal relationship with him? If you're violating those things, guess what? It's not us. We're out. We're liars and deceivers, and we've been lied to and we've been deceived for a myriad of reasons, from the government to the preachers to the churches, the denomination, even the Sabbath keeper organizations. None of them are immune to it. They're all big businesses and they manipulate the people for their own advantages. All right, I got to take some of this out. I'm sorry. It's already time to call it quits. Psalm 15:1. Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your holy hill? So here's the question. Like I said, it's the equivalent of appearing in front of God in prayer on your knees, having the relationship with Him. It's another reason why those that depart from us, Jesus will say, depart from me, you workers of iniquity, I never knew you. It's more than just going to church on Sunday and chasing Easter eggs on Easter. It's much more than that. Those are the obvious, simple ones. Verse 2, he who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. That's a tall standard, like I talked about a couple days ago, God's standard. That's a hard one. Do we do this? Psalms 101, verse 2. I will behave wisely in a perfect way. Oh, when will you come to me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. This is when nobody else is there, nobody else sees it. You are working on having a perfect heart yourself. This is stuff we do ourselves. Verse 3, I will set nothing wicked before my eyes. I hate the work of those who fall away. It shall not cling to me. A perverse heart shall depart from me. I will not know wickedness. Do we make that a goal in our own individual lives? I'll put the kids to bed because they shouldn't see this. And then you do it and it's wicked. Or you have things in your house. You allow things in your house. You allow things in your life that are wicked and wrong and evil. Verse 3, Psalm 15, verse 3. He who does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against his friend. Oh, man. Forget about the world. The Sabbath church is full of violators of this kind. It's sad. It hurts. It shouldn't be. How many people refuse to have anything to do with you because they just don't like you anymore? For whatever the reason. Tom and I were talking about that a few days before we all came down here. Psalm 101, verse 5. Says, whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy. We got to watch our own tongues, our own selves, so that we're not guilty of this. Now, slander and destroying them is as evil as murder. You're destroying someone else, their character, they're trying to make others have feelings against them and reject them, and God says if we do that, he will destroy us. The one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure. So who can dwell in your holy hill? Who can have a relationship with you? Not if we do this. Leviticus 19, verse 16. You shall not go about as the talebearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke your neighbor and not bear sin because of him. You shall not take vengeance or bear any grudge against the children of your people. In other words, don't get even. I don't know about you, but when somebody comes after me or tries to hurt me, first thing that pops up is, oh, take this. It's wrong. It's evil. But you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Doesn't the Gospels tell us that? To pray for those that sin against us, deceitfully abuse us and use us, and he'll take care of it. Proverbs 6:16. These six things the Lord hates, yes, seven are abomination to him. It goes through and try and shorten this up. I don't have time to read each one and talk about each one. But if we do any of those seven things, it's evil. It will cause us not to have a relationship with our own Father, our Heavenly Father, and we're certainly not going to have salvation. Don't let the world deceive you. It's already deceived most of the people in this country into practicing communism. Don't let the churches and the preachers and everybody else and family and friends and deceive you. Get it from the pages of your own Bible. And when you read it, look at it. It's more important than a career. So we need to start studying it and taking it for what it is. Psalm 15, verse 4, back to Psalm 15. In whose eyes a vile person is despised, but he honors those who fear the Lord. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change. He who does not put out his money at usury, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things shall never be moved. In other words, even if you suffer some yourself because of it, it's not to your advantage. You don't even have to suffer. It's just not to your advantage. You could take some money and make some usury, some interest off of it, or you promise something to someone, you do it, you help somebody, even if it costs you something yourself. Your time, it doesn't always have to be money. It can be your time, anything. You help someone because it's the right thing to do. Israel spends all kinds of time helping us. He helps us load the stuff up at church. He helps us unload the stuff. And when we get back at church late Thursday night, he's going to help us unload the trailer. And that's just the easy part. And then we got to put it back together. And then every week he shows up early and unlocks and gets things ready. And the kids, at one point, they thought he was said going to help them say, well, we're going to clean this up. And he was working with the kids. And they said, no, that cleaning lady that comes in, she'll take care of it. They don't even know that the cleaning lady was him. While everybody's gone and nobody's there, he's in there serving God and helping others. Psalm 101, verse 7. He who works deceit shall not dwell within my house. He who tells lies shall not continue in my presence. Early I will destroy all the wicked of the land, that I may cut off all the evildoers of the city of the Lord. All right, let's go ahead and skip to Revelation. Do each and every one of us individually have the ability to approach God? If we're guilty of any of these things, get rid of it. Stop. Get on your knees. Ask Him for help. Because I want everybody to be able to have free access to the throne. Really do. Not just me. Everybody here wants the same thing, I'm sure, for everyone else. If we couldn't live on His holy hill, He's not going to live inside of us. Yes, He gives His Holy Spirit to those who obey Him, but obeying Him is more than do this, don't do that. It's a condition of our heart. It's the love. You know what the greatest commandment of all is? Love. We've got to love God and we've got to love our neighbor. It still comes down, it's still love. Number one above everything else, love. So often you see people treating others in a way that they shouldn't. Being mean to others. Pointing out flaws that others have. If we do that, I'm not talking about helping somebody that's struggling. I'm talking about we don't have that particular flaw. If we did, we wouldn't point it out if somebody else did it. But since we don't have that one and somebody else has a flaw out there and we is it a flaw? Yes. Is it a problem? Yes. Is it a shortcoming? Yes. Is it violating something that God says? Yes. And I don't care what the subject is. But helping in love and educating and whatever it is, finding out if there's something we can do to help that person because there's a reason that they're doing it. Or maybe they're just struggling and they know it and they know they should change. And they just don't. Love should be the guiding force. Love, yes, you will tell somebody, you will help somebody, you will try and educate somebody, but if it's not done in love, guess what? It will fail, I guarantee it. How many are here today that are, don't raise your hand, but I know stories of several, that are refugees and dissidents from another group where they abused people? Never give up. Revelation 22:12, and behold, I am coming quickly, and my reward is with me, to give everyone according to his work. Verse 13, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last. Blessed are those who do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life. When we do what God says, we actually, it's a contract. We don't look at it like that, but the Bible, the covenant, is a covenant is a contract. We have certain rights and obligations, and too often we focus on the obligations, but the only reason you want to do the obligations is so that you can enjoy the rights, so that we can be happy. That they have right to the tree of life and may enter through the gates into the city. But outside are the dogs and sorcerers and sexually immoral and murderers and idolaters and whoever loves and practices a lie. I, Jesus, have sent my angel to testify to you these things in the churches. I am the root and the offspring of David, the bright and morning star. The Spirit and the bride say, come. And let him who hears say, come. And let him who thirsts, come. Whoever desires, let him take up the water of life freely. He wants us all there. But he's got to protect the others from the ones that won't do what he says. Never give up. Don't let Satan deceive you. Let's all get our priorities straight.